tonight, going to take a look at a very interesting passage. It was a tough one because I only did one verse. I wanted to do more, but I felt like I should just do one. And the reason why is because it's on parenting. And those of you that are single, you need to really listen, because you want to be married one day. And so you need to kind of look and listen to really the type of mate that God wants you to have. And if you don't listen, you're going to miss it and marry the wrong one. And it's a sad thing when you begin to see that how miserable a marriage can really be. But it's a very interesting passage. And as I have tried to find each one different, because I do believe that each of our lives are growing in faith. And we have taken a look at Joseph last week and how he had faith to go through tremendous suffering. And he never really complained. He said, "You meant it to be evil, but God meant it to be good." What an attitude. Well, tonight we're going to be taking a look at Hebrews chapter 11, verse 23. And it really goes all the way through about verse 29, seven verses on the life of Moses. And so we want to take a look, and probably one of the great stories of the Bible. It took place on the shore of the Nile. And you remember that little ark was floating down that little river. And all of a sudden, the princess took it out, and Miriam was right there to say, "Hey, would you like me to find somebody to nurse your child?" And the princess said, "Sure." And so she took him back to her mother, Jochebed, and there she was able to nurse the child. And interesting, the word wean doesn't really mean what we understand it, like 2, 3, 4 months. Many believe it was for years, 12 years. They would wean the child, and then at 12, the child would be on its own. So it's a good possibility that she was involved with Moses a little bit longer than just 3 months. But we pick up the story in a very interesting way. This little ark became a battleship to sink Egypt. And that's kind of a cool story. In that ark was a little baby, and that baby was Moses, and Moses was going to be the Redeemer to deliver the people of Israel. And in verse 23, it's interesting, by faith, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a proper child, or a fair child. Now, the word in the Hebrew is a word, or in the Greek, that means the same as in the Genesis, where God said, "All things are good." In other words, this is good, same word. And it says, a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. Let's have a word of prayer. Father, I pray that you would take the years of parenting in my own heart. And Father, as I look at my children growing up, that Lord, there are things that I would do different. And I pray that God, that you would give us something that we could grab a hold of, that we could really make a commitment. And that, Lord, those who are single would really see the type of mate that, God, you want them to have. Godly characters within their life. And when, Father, two are walking together, Lord, you can do a wonderful thing. But, God, if there is a division among us, Lord, our prayers are hindered. And we need to go back to each other and take care of it, because we desire to see you move in a powerful way. So give us ears to hear in Jesus' name. Amen. It's kind of deceiving in verse 23 because it looks like it's Moses' faith, but it really isn't. And by faith, Moses, the only thing that Moses did is he cried at the right time and probably smiled at the right time, and those chubby little legs probably won her heart. And that's about all that Moses did. The faith is in what the parents did. And it was incredible, and what lessons we can learn, I think, really honestly, it has to deal with parents trusting God. And I don't believe when we were young, we were doing ministry and we loved and we trusted God. And then our kids went through some tough times and we went through some tough times. And now that we're older, my wife and I, we've come to a new place in our life that we kind of just trust God with the kids. And if I would have had that early in life, just understanding the sovereignty of God. I think a lot of times your children see you panic. A lot of times they see you not really trusting God. And so when you have somebody that you're married to that isn't looking to God and you are, it becomes a difficult thing. because your prayers are kind of hindered. You really can't go together before God. And so one's praying one thing, another's praying another. But these two really trusted God. And I think that's the message tonight. They were very, very faithful in their commitment to God. And I believe that parents can make a tremendous difference in their children. And we live in a society that women today are into building corporate things and building other things. And the home, and I'm not saying that's bad, but the home is not really important. It's secondary. And I don't know how we got here, but we have to admit, home is something that really does not have our focus. And the greatest work, if you say to somebody, well, I'm a homemaker, they look at you like, is that all you do? And you look at Susan Wesley, you look at here, Jochebed, because of her faithfulness, Moses was the redeemer of the world to bring Israel to their knees. And he was the lawgiver. And through him, God moved. And it was two people out of the tribe of Levi. And once again, Amram, which was the father, and Jochebed, which is the mother. And then, of course, look at the family they had. Miriam, one, Aaron, the great high priest, two, and once again, Moses. I mean, a dynasty. With this family, God changed the world. And so you never, ever want to put yourself down as a mother, a father, a grandfather. You have the ability to affect lives, and that's the key here, because you're willing to pray together, and you're willing to work together, and you're willing to trust God together. And the children need to see that. They need to see that your relationship with God is more important than television. I would have changed that early in my life. Oh, we enjoyed television. It was kind of neat hanging out. But if I had to do it again, and I can't say what my wife would do, I don't think she would do much different. I would spend much more time hanging out with my children, praying with them, encouraging them in a very important way. And parents, like once again Moses, they were changed for the glory of God. And they were no longer fearful, but they were trusting God. And so we see a couple things in Exodus chapter 20, or Exodus chapter 2. It's an interesting history about this couple. And in verses 1 through 10, I want to read this to you, because it's singular. It talks about her. And then in Hebrews, we'll come back to it, it's plural. It talks about them. And so in Exodus chapter 2, verse 1 through 10, and there went a man from the house of Levi, and he took the wife of the daughter of Levi. Kind of interesting, they married under the same flag. And I think that's important. If you're Pentecostal and your husband's Baptist, you got problems. He'll be just kind of in his three-piece suit, and you'll be jumping up in bed speaking in tongues before you go to bed. It's going to be a problem. He's want to go down here, and you want to stand up and shake and everything else, and he wants to sit there and fold his little hands, and you're not going to know what church to go to. You got to live under your flag. You got to make sure you're going down the right road. You need no divisions in your life spiritually. And so we find here, and the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could no longer hide him, she took him from the ark. And she dabbed it with slime, with pitch, tar, and put the child therein, and she laid it in the reeds by the river bank. And his sister, that be Miriam, stood afar off to what she could do. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maids walked along the river side. And when she saw the ark among the reeds, she said to her maids to fetch it. And when she had opened it, so there was a top on, kind of interesting, so the baby wouldn't tip over, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. And she had compassion on him, and said, "This one of the Hebrew children." Then said his sister Miriam to the Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of a Hebrew woman, that she may nurse the child for thee?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." And the maid went and called the child's mother. And the Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, "Take this child away, nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages." Isn't that cool? You're going to get paid for taking care of this kid. And the woman took the child and nursed it. And the child grew, And she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter. And he came, became her son. And she called his name Moses. And she said, because I drew him out of the water. Now go back to Hebrews 11:23. And it goes from singular to plural. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, underline that. Because they, underline the word they, saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. And then in Acts, in chapter 7, verse 20, it says, in which time Moses was born, and was exceedingly fair, and nourished up in his father's house 3 months. And when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him as her own son. Now, there's a lot to be said in those verses. First of all, it's just not one, it's both of them. And when we look at this passage, it's interesting that it talks about this couple. And I'm not going to turn there, but you can jot it down, Numbers 26, verse 59. It mentions their names. It mentions Aaron, Moses, and Miriam as their sister. So this was the family that God ordained, much like your family he has ordained. Now, I don't believe that we really see it that way. I think we just get married, we have kids, we make money, we go in debt, and we go on with our life. But God brought you to that woman or to that man. And then God entrusted you with that child. Yeah, it was a moment of passion and you conceived, but God allowed it to happen. God gave you that moment because God knew the timing and he wanted this child in the world. And God has given you a destiny in your life. And you will never be able to get rid of those kids for the rest of your life, good, bad, or indifferent. Because that's the calling of God in your life. You're a parent. And God is going to teach you through these kids unconditional love. He's going to challenge you like you've never been challenged before. He's going to teach you what it is to really trust God. They're going to get sick. They're going to have difficult times. They're going to push you to the limits. But you need to trust God, both of you. You need to really understand that these kids need to be blanketed by prayer. And I think it's important to really see that in a very interesting way. And they were embarrassing. These kids embarrassed their moms and dad. It was Aaron, you remember, that brought in idolatry, the golden calf. And it was Miriam, she murmured, because Moses got married, and she murmured, and God said, come here, Miriam. Because you murmured, all of Israel is going to stop for 7 days, and she became a leper. And all of a sudden, she had leprosy, and so we find that Moses interceded, and God healed her. And then we find again Moses got angry and smote the rock and couldn't go into the promised land. But then there were moments that these kids really blessed mom and dad. Aaron was the high priest, the great man who stood before God once a year. He was decked out. He was beautiful before God. Miriam was the woman that had the tambourine singing about redemption, how God destroyed the whole army. And they danced there on the other side of the Red Sea. And Moses was the lawgiver and took the children of Israel, all of them, all the way through the wilderness. What a wonderful leader, and gave us the law. So your kids are going to bless you and they're going to bum you out. They're going to embarrass you and they're going to praise you. And you need to be consistent. When they embarrass you, you cannot become embarrassed. You need to deal with it, but what happens is we try to make sure our kids don't embarrass us. Well, you can do that, but they're going to do it because you embarrass God. I embarrass God. But how do I deal with issues? You see, I oftentimes overreact. I'm more concerned about how people view me than about my kids. And so you can live your life with these children, and you can miss the opportunity to put into their life the nourishment of God. It says in Acts that they were full and filled with nourishment those 3 months. And if it went on longer, you know that Jochebed poured her life into that mind because there came a time when he had to make a decision. He chose the suffering of Christ more than all the things of the world. He made the right choice. And your kids will come back and they're going to make the right choices in your life. And God was moving. And God wanted something to happen. And because they wouldn't move, they were in Goshen. Everything was great. But then things begin to fall apart. Joseph, you remember, died. And then the Pharaoh died. And then there was a Pharaoh that knew not Joseph. And then they went into slavery because God wanted them out. And they wouldn't listen. And so all of a sudden now, under this incredible pressure and pain, this Pharaoh said, I'm going to start killing these babies. Now it's time to really trust God. And so what are you going to do? The pressure's on. Life is spared and you're just under slavery and they've taken away the wheat and they've taken away the straw and they're beating you and complaining. What are you going to do? You got to trust God. And it's in those moments where things don't go right. It's in those moments where all of a sudden you didn't get the bonus or that didn't happen with the car or someone dinged your car or your wife just got a new car and she banged it up already. It's in those moments you're going to infect those kids with the way they're going to live their life for the glory of God. It's all going to burn. But when we're young, material things are everything. And when we get old, relationships are everything within our life. I'd like to show you five things tonight that I picked up out of this passage, and I hope they help you in a real wonderful way. Number one, both of these, husband and wife, had a cooperating faith. A cooperating faith. And what I mean here in verse 23, it says, his parents, and they saw, and they were not afraid. That tells me that they were both going the same way. They were both doing exactly what God called them to do. And they weren't fighting against each other. They weren't hassling with each other. They had a mission in life. And I look at marriages, even my own, and sometimes we just look at each other and we realize, you know, what's going on here? You're not doing this, I'm not doing that. But God put us together for what reason? To fight? No. To win the kingdom of God, to serve together. And I believe that the calling of God in my life and Gail's life is to further the kingdom of God. So Satan's going to attack our relationship. We need to grow up. We need to be able to say, no matter what happens, I'm going to trust God. And if Gail doesn't, I got to trust God. And if I don't, she has to trust God. In other words, somebody has to trust God in this family. And when all of a sudden you're not trusting God, you're in trouble. And what's happening today is people are getting married to people that are not trusting God. They're trusting their social security, they're trusting their job, they're trusting what they drive, but they have no knowledge of who God is in their life. And when you hit a situation, you're going to have a difficult time. Or if that kid comes out and hits a miscarriage, or that kid is Down syndrome, it's going to shatter your life. You need to seek God's hand in everything you do. And so the first thing about a couple, this couple, is they work together. They were committed. They both saw. They both understood. And that means that they were tuned in to this boy. They understood what was taking place. They had a mutual commitment to this boy. And it's kind of interesting. They saw that he was a proper child. They knew that he was special. I don't know how. They just knew in their heart that this boy had the capacity of being great. And your kids have the capacity of being great. And I think that we hinder those kids from greatness. Because we don't see the greatness of God in our own lives. If we would believe that God is able to do whatever he needs, he could do it. And so God's going to try your faith. He's going to challenge your life. Wash machines are going to blow up. Microwaves are not going to work. You're not going to get that parking stall in front of Vons. You're going to have to stand in the crowd. You're going to get uptight. You're going to get weird. You're going to have to duck on the freeway so you're doing a shot. You got to pick up those kids and fight this and fight that. And you got to keep the joy of God. How do I do that? You got to trust God. You see, it needs to become practical within your life. It's not trusting God here where we worship and then we walk out and we say, hey, get me home. And we run home and all of a sudden we do this. I got this dog I told you about. I mean, he's like a kid. He's just there. He wants to play. Every night he wants to play. That's all he wants to do is play. And I'm thinking, you know, just be a dog. I don't want to play. But you know, I feel, he looks at me, this pug with his eyes and droopy eyes, and I feel bad. I feel bad, so I call him, you know, Nathan sometimes. Nathan, I'll play with you. I didn't play with you enough. Let's play. And you know, I play with him for 10 minutes. And then, and then he just lays there the rest of the night. I mean, that's all he wants. But sometimes I don't see that. And so the first thing I realize is faith has to be active. In other words, it cannot remain idle. If your faith is not growing, if your faith is not growing in the grace of God, then you're not going to be working together. If you're not talking about God, sharing God, going to church together, fighting to stay together, having little dates. I said to my wife today, let's go out and have breakfast together. I didn't have dinner all this week with her. So I got to go after that stuff. If my kids don't see that, if my wife doesn't see that, it's not going to work. We got to make time. And so the first thing, it has to be once again something that you do together. It can't be Gail looking at something and I don't want it. Well, all of a sudden, you know, one of her nephews had a baby today and she's excited. I need to get excited. I'm excited. I just excited a different way. I got to tell you, I really am excited. Just glad it's not you. I mean, what can I say, you know? I'm excited. Baby's crying. Technology, cameras. She can hear the baby. I mean, it's wonderful. But for me, I mean, it's great. But I want you to know I'm really jazzed. Jazzed as I get. You know? I'm just a guy. What can I say? So we're together through thick and thin. And we don't blame each other when the kids walk out and we don't blame each other and we should have done that and we didn't do that. No way. We're in this together. We're committed together. We're loyal together. We're going to finish this thing together. We're going to pray this thing through. And I don't care what anybody else sees. They're going to see us trusting God no matter how hard it gets. Period. We have a cooperating faith. Number two. They had a courageous faith. You have to have a courageous faith in your marriage. You have to have a courageous faith in your single life, but also in your married life. It needs to be courageous. Notice it says here in verse 23, they were not afraid of the king's commandment. Now that's kind of cool. In other words, in difficult times, when they were being beaten, when Pharaoh was coming down upon them, when they were being challenged and babies were being killed and things were going on, this couple said, no way. We're not going to bow to this king. We're putting our foot down right here. This is our son. This son's going to live for God. You need to be strong. You need to say no to HBO. You need to be so strong that you're willing to divide the line between light and darkness and you don't care what anybody thinks in your life. And that's not happening today. Because couples are hanging out with couples they should not even be hanging out with. And we're looking to be blessed materially. But God wants you to know that you need to be courageous in your faith. And that means you need to be strong. To make the tough decisions. To trust God with those areas of your life. And so he says, once again, there's another Pharaoh. And Israel was going through a difficult time. No home was safe. No child was safe. No parent was safe. But once again, they said no. And why? You remember what Peter said? You cannot teach about Jesus Christ. And Peter said, listen, should we obey God or should we obey you? We will obey God. So you need to obey the laws until the laws say that you cannot serve God. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Nebuchadnezzar said, bow. And they said, we're not bowing and we're not going to burn. We're not going to do it. And you need to have that type of uncompromising commitment. You're not going to talk about divorce. You're going to die to who you are. You're not going to try to find somebody else. This is the woman. This is the guy you made a commitment with. Now work together. Fight together. Not at each other. Fight the enemy and fight for your kids and fight for your grandchildren. How do you do that? You pray. You fellowship. You talk about it. You don't blame each other. And that's what's happening today. In other words, you need to be courageous in your faith. Joshua said, I want this land. Caleb said, give me that mountain. And you need to start claiming things for the glory of God. And Calvaries are so afraid because we go to the other extreme. Don't do nothing. Don't claim it. But you need to stand on the promises of God. God gave you those kids. You raise them in the ways of the Lord, and they're going to come back. But if you don't discipline them, if you don't take the paddle to them, if you don't drive out that rebellion, they're going to bring shame and disgrace to your face. But if you train them and you've done it, and my wife has done it, God will turn them around. It might be a few years, but God has made a commitment. We stand on the promises of God. We're courageous. What a drag, you know. And your whole life you talk about what we should have done. No. We raise them in the ways of the Lord. And I think it's important that you have tremendous faith, and God gave them the faith. And this is kind of cool. God gave them the faith for 3 months to have tremendous victory. But at the end of 3 months, they didn't have the faith. Moses was crying probably too loud. And so it came to a moment, and that's kind of interesting. It only lasted for 3 months. And common sense said, listen, it's too dangerous now. We got to come up with another plan. And they made a great decision. It was time to give them up. And I think that when God speaks to you about giving your kids up, you got to give them up. I think when God tells you, you got to let go, let him go. I'll tell you what I see and what I've always believed. I believe that I have the rope to my children. And you are to let that rope out a little bit every single year. And as that water begins to get a little bit more bumpier, you kind of pull it and let them know that you have it. And you let it out and it becomes more bumpier and you let it out. And they begin to understand what the turbulence of this world's all about. You shelter those kids. One day they're going to go crazy on you. I believe it's your responsibility to trust God and put the Word of God in their minds and start letting them stand out and trust God. Most of the parents will not trust God with their kids. And the kids tell me all the time, my parents don't trust me. Have they proven? Well, they have. They've lied. Well, you have to work with that. And so a courageous faith, I think, is so important. But listen, number three, this is real practical. Not only did they have a faith that worked together, and they had a courageous faith, but number three, they had a calculated faith. And I want to really make a point on this. They had a calculated faith. I want you to look at chapter 2, or say where you are in Exodus. It's kind of a cool little verse. And the woman conceived and bare a son, and she saw him, and she took him to the river, you remember. She built this ark. Well, here's what it means to me. Sometimes we think, well, faith is buying this house, but we really can't afford it. That's stupidity. And faith is, once again, charging everything on a credit card and not having money to do it. Because you heard the word charge, and so you're running through the mall charging. No, now you're living above your means. That's poor stewardship. And sometimes you say, well, hey, you know, I want to live by faith. Well, faith is realistic, and faith is practical. Faith is not stupid. Faith has a calculated decision. When you step out, it's very hard. But you have to go through certain things to realize. If I said, I'm going to go buy something in Palos Verdes and 10 acres and just buy it, how am I going to pay for it? Well, I'm going to trust God for it. Well, you ought to shoot me. You see, it's like, that's not faith. That's stupidity. Now, if faith would say we have 8 million in the bank, which we don't, but all of a sudden now we can kind of, we'll go for it, because if it doesn't work out, we can get out of it, or we can make us, it's going to be a stretch. But we can step out and listen what happened here. Number one, kind of interesting, they had a plan. Interesting plan. And the plan was very simple. They picked the spot. I really saw that in my mind. They didn't put this thing way at the end of the river. They put this thing right there where she was going to take a bath. I mean, why jeopardize the baby? Secondly, they sent Miriam, which is interesting. Because she was the one that put the baby in that water. And she watched that baby. And she waited till that princess picked it up. And then she said, hey, I know somebody that can take care of that child. And then thirdly, it says that they weaved this basket and they put slime, tar. They didn't want the thing to sink. And then fourth, there was a top on it. In case it did roll over, it come back up again. In other words, everything was thought about. Now, when you think about your kids, or you think about life, or you think about a job, or you think about buying a house, or you think about a car, or you think about buying this house, do you even think about what school your kid's going to go to? In other words, you got to think. Now, can you imagine if Moses or, you know, Amram, who, the father, said, I just kind of throw this thing together and put a little bit of tar here and there, the thing would sink. I'm not going to put a lid on it. You know, he needs a little bit of sun. And you know, maybe Miriam wasn't paying attention. She was talking to her girlfriends. And, you know, the princess picked the baby up and took it. In other words, no. If I'm going to step out in faith, I need to be focused. And that doesn't happen today. People want to live by faith, but they want to go by feeling. This is what they're really saying. I think if you're going to take great steps with God, you got to be disciplined. And I think if you're going to have a great family, you got to understand warfare. If you're going to be a great father, you're going to have to sacrifice. If you're going to be a great wife, you're going to have to give up the glory, everything. It just seems that way. And then you're going to have to understand for the rest of your life, you're going to pray for these kids. In other words, this is the commitment. Together we made the commitment. Together we're going to fight for the commitment. But thirdly, we're going to have a calculated, this is happening, this is how we're going to solve it. And we talk, my wife and I, how are we going to deal with this? What are we going to do? If this happens, how are we going to answer it? And then we have to live by faith. I like what Chuck Smith once said, you do the best you can, you commit the rest. Or what Conway said, you know, trust God and keep the powder dry. You know, when war comes, you got to shoot them. But trust God until they come and then make sure you keep the powder dry. In other words, you know, let's keep the options open here. We can back up. We can go this way, that way. It's not just blind faith. This is a child. This is a boy. This is a girl growing up in your home. They have different personalities. You got to agree. You can't be fighting. And then I see also kind of an interesting thing. Number four, a contagious faith. It says here in verse 7 of Exodus chapter 2, verse 7, then said his sister to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call thee a nurse and the Hebrew woman that she may nurse the child for you? Now, this is so cool. Guess what? Mom and dad had the vision, agreed? Miriam caught the vision. This child caught the vision of her brother. In other words, faith is contagious. You know what else is contagious? Murmuring is contagious. Unthankfulness is complaint. Whining is... Guess where your kids learned how to whine? Your kids are a direct result of who you are. You don't like them. Well, you don't like yourself. You trained them. Everything they have is from you. Oh, no, I don't like this church. Well, it is. What can I say? In other words, if you're reacting, they're going to react. If you're not trusting, they're not going to trust. In other words, they're going to mimic you. And it's never too late to change. But she caught the vision in the home. Miriam was able to follow through and never took her eyes off her brother. And the moment that woman opened it, and the moment Moses cried, she said, would you like me to find a woman for you to nurse? Yeah, that'd be great. It was Moses' mother. Brilliant. It was calculated. It was planned. It was kind of exciting. And everyone caught that vision. Placing the baby in the river, waiting for the right moment. You just don't throw the baby in. You got to wait for the right moment. You tell your kids sometimes, you know, at 10 o'clock at night, you deal with them. Wait till the morning and blast them. Let them think about it. Sometimes you go home and tell your wife at 11 o'clock at night what you don't like about her. It's a poo. That's a real dumb thing to do. You know, there's the time and the place. Some of you correct your wives in front of other couples. You ought to be shot. If we don't, you're going to be shot on the way home. In other words, you don't put people down. There's a time, a place, there's an attitude. And so Miriam waited for the right moment. She looked for the right spot. She placed the baby in the right time. And then she kept her eyes open. To me, it's a tremendous thing about parenting. Where did she learn that? How did she learn to do this in the midst of danger? And you say, well, the kids have so much danger. There's so much danger. Listen, this was a dangerous place. They were taking babies out of homes, killing them. But she had enough faith, because her mom and dad had enough faith, that she was willing to risk her life to save this one boy. And definitely God helped her. And so I find kind of interesting that not only that, but guess who? The princes caught the vision. So there's a lot of people catching vision. Moses, all he did is, yeah! And she caught, and then all of a sudden, everything happened. Bam, bam, bam. And hey, would you like, yes, go ahead and take the baby. Everybody caught the vision. And guess what? Mom really had the vision. She had her baby back. And guess what? She got paid for it. That's kind of really cool. And I'm going to close by saying, I can't close, one more point. I think also, number five, a contagious faith is number four. Number five, a committed faith. This is really exciting to me. Notice this says here in verse 23, and they saw he was proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. In other words, and then in chapter 2, verse 10 of Exodus, and the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moses, and she said, and here it is, because I drew him out of the water. Now, let me tell you what I mean by commitment. You can talk about it. You can share it. You can teach it. You can preach it. You can do everything else. But until you put that baby in that water, you're not trusting God. That's what it means. You can come up with a plan. You can build the ark. You can put the slime on it. You can put the baby in the basket. You can do everything else. But until you put that baby in that water, you're not trusting God. So you can talk about your children. You can complain about your children. You can take your children to church. You can get them all the counseling. But until you give that kid to God and believe that God's going to take a hold of him, you're not trusting him. Because that's one step that kills us. It's that blind step of, now it's time for me to really let go. And it takes a lifetime. It takes a lifetime to let go. And let me tell you, because they did not fear is because they had faith. And perfect love cast out all fear. And so the stronger your faith is, the less fear will govern your life. And the stronger your love is with your children, the more faith they're going to be able to have. It's our insecurity and our fears that oftentimes destroy the unity of the family. And there comes a time where Gail has to let go and I have to let go. And when we finally let go, God says, fine, I will now become the parent of these two kids, these three kids. And I will lead them and I will guide them, and your ways are not my ways and your thoughts are not my thoughts. You need to trust me, Gail and Steve. I have a plan for each of your children. I told you that. You need to believe me. But God, why aren't you? Stop. Do you trust me? Yes, we do. Then you pray. And you blanket these kids with prayer. And you fast for them once in a while, like Job, every day he sacrificed so his kids would not be in sin. In other words, pray together. Seek the Lord together. Make the commitment. Give it up. And if you don't do that, then one hangs on to the kid, the other one gives it up, and you're fighting back and forth. And one person has faith, and then the other couple says, well, you just don't care. Oh, you know, now you're in a huge fight. And Satan just laughing his heart out. Satan's laughing because your kids are out there on their way to hell, you think? And he's laughing because you guys are fighting, so you don't want to talk no more. And he's laughing because, you know, you're the senior pastor of the church. You're dingling. Oh. Well, I believe that we got into this whole thing to destroy the kingdom of darkness. And I don't have time to fight. I have time to win. And I have time to fight for relationships and fight for people. And if I have to die, so be it. But I'm not going to do everything and then not make a commitment. They made the commitment. So you can be together as a couple, great couple, and you can do a lot of things, but when God tells you, give it up. And some of you, God has told you to give up that boyfriend and you haven't done it. Or you have done it, but now you still wish you had him. You gotta let it go. Put it in the water. If you're ever gonna have it back, put it in the water. And so I find very simply, stepping out, they yielded their life. They yielded their life. They surrendered their child. They saved the world and they delivered Israel. I remember, and I gotta tell you this, it's very embarrassing. And Gail had much stronger faith than I did. But I think Nathan was two. I don't know. I think he was two. And he had like, and I don't want to exaggerate, 400 or 500 blisters all over his body. And my greatest fear is that God would take him. Because everything I've ever had, it seems like God's taken. My health, everything else. But this one child, I'm going to raise him. And then he got sick. He got really sick. And I remember, I think, that we had to put him in a sheet and drop him in this water and it was 2 o'clock in the morning, I think, 2, 3 o'clock, and Gail went to bed just trusting God, but I couldn't. And I went in there and I was holding him, and God said, let him go. I said, no, you're going to kill him. And it was a turning point of my life, and God says, why would I do that? And if I do, would you praise me? And I remember it was 4 o'clock in the morning, 2 hours I fought with God, and finally I was so tired, I said, then go ahead and take him. And God healed him. You see, to give God your children means you trust him. And we have a hard time trusting anybody. But he made the kid. He knows the kid. He knows the very breadth of his life. He knows the very steps he's going to take. His days are numbered. And it's not up to you to keep him alive. God keeps him alive. It's up to you to love him and nurture him and commit him to God. And so when you pray, you need to say to your boy, your daughter, let's commit our lives to God again. You commit your life. You surrender your life. You set the example. And if you're stumbling your wife and your behavior, you're stumbling your kids. It's time for men to be strong and courageous and say, this is the way we're going to live. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. You don't complain about where you live or I don't have this. You live for the glory of God and God will change all that. I guarantee it. And so I find that Moses once again was born. And then lastly, I had a comforting faith. In chapter 2, verse 8, and Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go, and the maid went and called her child's mother. And she was able to enjoy. And God will always restore. And so the six things of cooperating faith, I think it takes two couples. I think if you're dating, it takes two people really committed to God. Secondly, I think it's very important that you have a courageous faith. A courageous faith. That you are willing to fight for a relationship. You don't give it up. You fight. You don't say, well, if they don't like me, forget it. You fight. You're the adult. They're the kids. You fight. You never give up any relationship. Jesus didn't give up on you. And thirdly, I think you have to have a calculated faith. You got to plan. You got to understand. You got to have ways to beat these children in a good way. Not beat them, but beat them at everything. And God will open and God will give you dreams and God will help you. You got to ask him. And then I think number four, you have to have a contagious faith. It has to catch on. My dog, he followed. I'm trying to get my staff to do that. They won't, you know. He just right there. I mean, it's the coolest thing. Toby, close. Okay. I mean, Gels just blows away. I mean, set. Okay. Lay. Okay. Roll up. Okay. He's the most obedient thing, but you know, he's kind of contagious. I kind of like him. And I found that, you know, I can whine and complain and he just loves me. So I don't do it to Gel no more. I just do it to my dog. It's a wonderful thing. You know, and I don't do the God, I just do my dog, and so he's cool. And he just looks and smiles, you know, okay. I got a master that doesn't know nothing. That's great. But I'll tell you what, I feed him. And when Gail's not around, I feed him. And when Gail's gone, I took him in the spa. And now guess what? He knows how to get in there, and he sits on the front step. And then he, guess what? He gets a bone, and he gets to watch TV with me. You know, and for that, he meets me at the front door. And for that, he's obedient to me. And for that, He'll die for me. Gail came home. I said, go get her. And I'll tell you what else. I trained him that when I clap my hands, he chases those cats right up through the house. It's so cool. So me and the dogs rule right now. So it's been 30 years, way too long. I got the upper hand finally. So, right. You believe that? And then a comforting faith, you know, when it's all said and done. Because you put the child in the river. Because you gave the things to God. God gives it all back to you. And I believe that when it's all said and done, Pharaoh was part of this plan. The princess was part of this plan. And we really are cooperating with God when it's all said and done. And sometimes the greatest disaster becomes the greatest things of God. And so tonight, the call is not just a faith that says, oh, I love God. It's a faith that reckons God's faithfulness and changes the course of history. And it starts in your home. And if you're dating and you don't see any of these characters in your guys, dump them. Because if they don't have it, they're never going to be your partner and they're never going to be your friend. You need a friend that sticks closer than a brother. You need to be loved by the Lord Jesus Christ.